Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Road to Cheltenham. Ruby and I are in position and we're really looking forward to this evening's show. We'll be looking ahead to the well-child Cheltenham Gold Cup and trying to imagine what will happen on that Friday. We'll also be looking back at the two key juvenile contests from the weekend and taking your questions on the handicappers, also talking about a certain spin-off show that there will be this weekend. But first of all, on Road to Cheltenham, normally we just focus on the racing and the news outside racing or inside racing that impacts on the races themselves, but some news items are just too large to ignore. And the images of Gordon Elliott and Rob James that were shared around the world and shamed racing is something that we must touch upon. However, Ruby has already talked about it extensively on his show, that's RTD2FM, and I have written about it on sportinglife.com, spoken about it on the Nick Luck Daily podcast and in other places as well. So we're not going to expand on what we've said already on this subject, particularly with the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board looking at the matter themselves tomorrow. But we are going to talk about your questions because you have had questions that you've sent into us on that subject. So Ruby, we're going to start with Richard Hogan. And he has tweeted to say, any thoughts on the Elliott horses for the handicaps? Should we put a line through them or assess the race as normal? I think it's important to address this issue, and I know final decisions on this won't happen until the outcome of the hearing on Friday and beyond, so it's hard to get a read on them, and the BHA decision means a change has to happen in the yard. This could go right down to the wire. What's your view?
Obviously we know the Shrewdy Park horses have already moved house, moved yard even, sorry. What do I think? I would be prepared to assess them as normal myself. I think we are that close to the festival. It's only 2 weeks away. The majority of those horses would have been pretty near peak. It would be my imagination of how Gordon Elliott would have done it. So they were pretty near peak, and it would only be a matter of ticking them over, keeping them healthy, fresh, well. There are small things, obviously, that will have changed from the yard they were in to the yards they're going to. But a lot of the horses are still obviously there. So I think for the moment, anyway, I would be pretty much treating it as normal.
Zeroing in on those horses that have moved at this stage, the Racing Guide has tweeted in and he's made a series of points. He says, I'd just like to point out something, and I could be miles off here, but from what I've learned, horses are a creature of habit. I've seen plenty of people on Twitter commenting that Cheveley Park stud moving their horses and that horses move yards all the time and some improve for the switch of yards. It might be true, but horses who switch yards are usually given sufficient time to settle in, never mind running a grade one in 2 weeks' time. The factors you have to take on board with a switch in yard in such a short space of time are things like change of drinking water, change in feed, change in hay, change of gallop, change of pads under the horse saddle for exercise, changing groom. It's an extensive list. I could be overreacting, but these factors may upset a horse's routine and they may need more than 2 weeks to adapt. It's something I'd like you to bring up with Ruby, please, for those who wouldn't know any of this, and to ask whether it is relevant or not.
I think you can make cases, Lydia, either or way, but just the best example I can give you is horses going to the Melbourne Cup. So therefore they have to leave. They have to do 2 weeks quarantine. Irish horses would have to do 2 weeks quarantine in Newmarket, therefore be trained on Newmarket gallops using Newmarket hay, Newmarket water. They would still bring their own feed. So if it was Willie Mullins, it would be Red Mills. They then fly to Australia where they spent 2 more weeks in quarantine, drinking Australian water, eating Australian hay, eating Red Mills feed in a different environment on a different gallop before they would have 2 weeks or out of quarantine by the time they run. Now, it was the same staff, same-ish training regime, but it can be done. And that shows, I think when you look at it that way, that's the best way I can equate it. Is the horses moving. There's horses moving from two environments. So an Irish horse would have to leave Ireland, quarantine in Newmarket, go to Australia and quarantine in Australia. The majority of Irish horses, I know Bally Doyle have their own quarantine facility, but that is for their horses. So I think that can be done. It's a different environment, different gallop. But I think this close to a race, as I said, answering the first question, the majority of those horses would be pretty close to where Gordon Elliott would have wanted them, and the training will only be a top up.
And not to labour the point, but we have just got one more tweet, and this is from Convict 2652. And he says, after Paul Nichols's comments, how do Lydia and Ruby feel that the moved horses will be affected? And as it's so close to the festival, are they likely to run below expectations? So Paul Nichols raised this as a concern. So clearly it is, there isn't a sort of uniform response on this, and it might be down to individual horses as well.
Of course it is. And ideally, when you say, I suppose still answering the previous question, but trying to answer this one as well, ideally, a trainer would like to get a horse, give it a break, and bring it back in for their own pre-season and then build it up in their own regime. Now, we're 2 weeks away from the Cup Final. That can't happen. So you make do with the situation you have. Will they perform? Will they underperform? That's how long is a piece of string. I don't think anybody knows the answer to it.
Do you have any insight or opinion on whether the jockeys are likely to keep the rides? Are they going to try?
I don't have any insight, official insight or anything to go by, but my understanding of what I've heard or read, and I seem to have heard so much and read so much, I'm struggling to decipher the difference between each at the minute, that Cheveley Park were keen to honour existing riding arrangements, something along those lines, and therefore I must have read that, but that is what I've heard. So Jack Kennedy on Envoy Allen, Quixilius, Barry Adam, Sir Gerhard would have been Jamie Codd. He obviously is an amateur. He won't be in Cheltenham anyway, so there'll be a change of rider there. But I think when you start to break down these things, logic will come to the fore.
Yes, you're trying not to change as many things. You're trying to maximise the horse's chance, full stop, aren't you?
Precisely.
So each decision will be made individually, you would think. And just finally, Ruby, can you give me a sense of the atmosphere in Ireland, in racing, in the industry in general at the moment?
I think it's a bit it's unprecedented anyway, Lydia, for a start. But I think everyone is looking at the sport as a whole and trying to rally and relay the message of how great a sport it is and how so many brilliant people try their very best in it. And I think that's the image people are trying to portray.
Absolutely. And that is rightly where we end this section. Now, with the juveniles, there are often some late, late shows. And we had one, at least one, in the Adonis at the weekend, Ruby. And that came from Tritonic.
Yeah, and he was pretty good. Did he really jump to favouritism? I'm not so sure, but it was a really, really good performance. Good gallop lined up, and obviously faced Cussalupi again, whom he had beaten at Ascot. In a bit keen going to the first and in a pocket, but he jumped the first really well, low and quick at it, Tritonic. Now, his jumping thereafter was okay. I think if you play it forward to the approach to the third hurdle, Cussalupi is in second place. Tritonic is right behind him, and behind him is Honor Jonk, who had fallen at Kempton. Now, Honor Jonk made a mistake at the third hurdle, and he's quite slow at the fourth hurdle, and that's race over for him. But now, if you play it away from the fifth hurdle, you'll see Adrian Heskin has to give Tritonic a squeeze, and you're thinking, I was thinking, oh, I thought he was a faster horse, but actually he is quite a resolute stayer. And off the home turn, where he comes to join Cussalupi, he was starting to get a bit tired. Tritonic jumps by him, down to the last hurdle. His last was probably his best jump. He attacked the last and was good at it. And then he starts to take off and he hits the line really, really strong. Yeah, I can see why people say, yep, he's the triumph horse. I think he's only probably done what Zana here has already achieved. And I think it'll be a brilliant race, and throwing Quilixius now as well. I think it's the makings of being a really good triumph hurdle. And I'm not going to say which one should be favoured. Tritonic is, but he didn't do enough to make me want to not be in the Zana here camp.
Yeah, nor me. I mean, it's close between them, and some books one of them's favourite. But I really liked how strong Tritonic was from the last. That, you know, give you, it's a real positive for 2 mile one rising finish at the new course at Cheltenham. He's the highest rated flat horse that Alan King, who of course is adept at winning the race, has brought to hurdling. But you mentioned Zanahir and Quilixios. You would think now that Quilixios has sadly moved from Gordon Elliott's to Henry de Bromhead's, that now he'll surely run in the triumph. There's no question of him taking up the Boodles Fred Winter entry now, is
I wouldn't have thought so. I thought with only £2 between them, I would think Quilixios will go in the Triumph, yeah. I would have thought.
And I think the race will suit him much better. The track, certainly, I think will suit him much better than the old course.
Look, I've probably said it a lot of times. I think the Boodles Fred Winter has been the best addition to a four-day Cheltenham Festival because it makes the Triumph not a lottery any longer. And now you have Tritonic, Zana here, Quilixios, French Aseel, and whatever else. I think you have the makings of a genuine grade one four-year-old hurdle.
Yeah, it's going to be superb. It was superb last year, and I think this edition is really strong as well. Tihupu won for the third time at the weekend as well.
Yeah, and he probably still has a little bit to find. I think, look, William Mullins ran a couple of newcomers here, and Paul Townend up the right, Tax for Max. But Tax for Max was a really difficult ride, and you'll see it down to the first hurdle here. He's just in behind Crassas, but look where his head is. And even as keen as he is, Paul's body, if you look at Paul's foot to his knee to his hip, he's not having to strain really hard to hold Tax for Max, but Tax for Max, when Paul is trying to pull him back, just puts his head bolt upright in the air and won't switch off from him. He was never going to run away with Paul, but he just won't put his head down and relax. And he pulls like that all the way up the home straight. If you look at the fifth hurdle, where at the back of it, you're thinking, yeah, Paul has Tax for Max. He gets his hands down on his withers. But by the time you get to the sixth hurdle, Tax for Max is jawing at him again. Tihupu jumps the sixth hurdle really well. By the time you play it on into the home straight, Tax for Max, the exertions of his pulling and dragging has meant he's ran his race, and Tihupu is left to jump the second last, which he does well. He slows down and pops the last and then gallops away to the line. It was a good performance. Could I see him troubling the others? I don't think so.
I think Gordon immediately after that was talking about the grade two over Easter instead, potentially for Tihupu. And then at Warwick, we had Cabo Cliffs, and Heros de Soy was absolutely no match for him whatsoever.
In any make, way, shape or form, Cabo Cliff jumped out, went a really good gallop, and he was electric over the first two hurdles. I was kind of thinking, imagine if Tritonic could jump like that. Cabo Cliff, first hurdle and second hurdle. Now, the third hurdle is plenty brave, in my opinion. Harry Skelton thinks he's going to take another stride, and Cabo Cliff just lets fly, but he gets there. And if you play it on to the third last hurdle where Cabo Cliff again pings it and Horos de Soy is just flat out. He's beaten that far from home. Cabo Cliff jumps the last and gallops all the way to the line. I think if you're riding in the Triumph and you're looking at it as a race, I think Cabo Cliff would be a great addition because you're guaranteed pace.
But he's only in the Boodles Fred Winter, a mark of 137. What do you reckon of that?
Yeah, he won't be making it in the Triumph, so will he? Cabo Cliff, 137. The old course would probably give him a better chance than the new course, the way he races.
Yeah.
And the Skeletons have aimed plenty of horses at the Boodles Fred Winter in the past, and if that's the way they're going, you'd have to respect it.
The last one I'm going to throw at you is Zafanian, who's a juvenile who won a handicap hurdle at Nace on Saturday.
Yeah, we pick him up turning in. Rock Chica had skipped along in front and slipped a couple of lengths clear of Zafanian. Hugh Morgan rode him, but Hugh was always confident that he had Rock Chica covered. And without ever getting overly serious, he gets up to Rock Chica at the second last hurdle. And Eason has the leisure of taking a pull between the last two hurdles. Stealing, he unleashes him at the last with a good jump and he scoots away to win. I think there are better juveniles in Ireland and horses equally as well handicapped as him.
Now, Ruby has promised me that he is going to rattle through the other significant races that took place in the past week. And the stopwatch is starting now.
I started 9 seconds ago. I think we'll start with Kylos Emery and we'll pick him up at the fifth fence, which is the ditch directly off at the opposite the stands in Nace. And if you watch him on approach, how he quickens to the jump and jumps it really well. He used to do that as a hurdler. He'd lost that as a chaser his last couple of runs. He seemed to have that back. Pinged the second last as well, gave it a lot of air and was much too good for Daily Tiger. Will he run the Cheltenham Festival or not? I don't know. He holds entries in the Champion Chase and the Queen Mother. I thought Tamarack the Matan at Kempton Park, watch him go to the last fence, comes up out of Harry Cobden's hands and gives it a foot. But all he did was give a big, big boost to Shishkin's form. And he's going to be a big rival to Enner Gramine and All Mankind. I think for the Mayor's Hurdle, we got Punchestown during the week. Black Tears ended up winning the Quiviga Hurdle. Nothing really major about this performance. She was entitled to win. She quickened up really well going to the last hurdle. But if we just bring you back to last year's Cheltenham Festival, here she is in the Coral Cup, facing up to the last hurdle with a big chance against Dame de Compagnie. And that Coral Cup form could be very relevant in the Mayor's Hurdle. We also had Jason the Militant in Fairy House on Saturday. He jumped out to make the running, went a really good gallop down to the first hurdle. Petit Mouchoir is behind him. They both absolutely pinged the fifth hurdle, the two of them. But by the time they turned in, Jason the Militant, given £9 to Petit Mouchoir, was much too good for him. Is it a champion hurdle performance? I don't know. Will he even go there? He may well do, but he definitely thrown his name in the hat. And if his trainer didn't have two really strongly fancied ones, maybe he would. He may still well go there, but he's a live runner.
Yeah, Henry de Bromhead was saying, I mean, I know he's got Honeysuckle and Aspire Tire, but early in the season he was saying that he was aiming at the champion hurdle with Jason the Militant. So it's interesting, and you can take it as an implied positive, really.
I would, definitely.
Welcome, everyone, to the Road to Cheltenham Handicapping Special. As you can see, we have a couple of faces that should be familiar to you from last year. We have Martin Greenwood. Martin, give them a wave.
Hello, everyone.
He's the Steeplechase team leader for the British Horse Racing Authority. And Andrew Miller, who represents the hurdles. He's the team leader for them. Andrew, give them a wave.
Hi, everyone.
Good to see you both. You have already face the press to talk about how you have handicapped the horses for the Cheltenham Festival. Andrew, you first. What was the most difficult one?
Oh, good question. I had a couple of French trained horses. Well, I had one French trained horse in the Fred Winter. The horse has never run in this country, called Baladin de Mesque. That was tricky just because, you know, it's very difficult to assess a horse who's never run in Britain or Ireland. And we also had a horse called Zurekin, who is actually trained by Sophie Leach, but has also only ever run in France, and that is the county hurdle. So just tricky, just because, you know, you've got to be a bit confident in the levels of French races as against, you know, GB or Irish races.
I've already had a correspondence from Alan Potts, who likes to watch French racing, who thinks that Baladin de Mesque might be well in.
Right, OK, we'll find out in 2 weeks' time, won't we?
Greeny, how about you? What was the most difficult one for you?
Yeah, I said this earlier today. I think Andrew's drawn a short straw in some degree. I think the hurdlers are always a bit more difficult. You get more sort of ex-French juveniles, etc. So I don't think chase-wise we had an individual that was hard to assess as such. But it's getting the levels of the novices right, basically. One example I picked earlier was Remastered of David Pipes. I've taken the view that the Reynoldstown this year is below standard by a few pounds. Obviously, time will tell whether I'm right or not. So Remastered is one of the favourites for the Ultimo. We may come on to that race again later. So I've got to be confident, and me and the other two guys in the chase team, that we get these novice levels right, both in the GB and Ireland. So that's the crucial bit, really.
Let's plunge straight in with your questions now, shall we? And we're starting with some more general ones. And this first one really gets at whether the methodology, if I can even say it, behind allocating marks to Irish horses has changed. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the name, the handle of this particular person. I do apologise. I'd expect plenty of questions about the boss's Oscar, but can I ask more generally about how handicappers look to assign a mark to the Irish horses, especially now with so few UK-Ireland crossover races this season, and how their approach has evolved over the years?
I'll take this one, Lydia, because the boss's Oscar, which you mentioned, I know Andrew's going to take that up shortly. I don't think it has changed in a great deal, really. I think the bit about the crossover this season is valid, obviously, because of COVID and Brexit and whatever. That's a fair point. We haven't as much cross-contamination, for want of a better phrase. But I don't think we approach the Irish question any differently. You know, we still use the same sort of consistent approach that we do for the English ones, really, or the UK ones, I should say. So we use standards, we use, you know, normal handicapping procedures. We do always look at the Irish marks as well. We get on really well with both Sandy and Shea, with the two Irish handicappers, for people out there that don't know. You know, we do liaise a lot. We do, you know, try and we send lists to each other regularly for the Anglo-Irish, etc. So it's not just us and them. But we, when horses come over here, we do have the final say. It's our jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So if we go a bit higher, and we'll discuss horses individually later, then that's because we've taken a higher view. And it's often the hurdlers more than the chasers, and then it's often novices rather than more exposed types. But I don't think a great deal's changed, is the honest answer.
Okay, I'm going to go with cross-pollination rather than cross-contamination, I reckon. Anything you want to add, Andrew?
Not from mine's covered. I mean, essentially, as I've said before, all we're trying to do is ensure a level playing field. And, you know, we want to treat these Irish horses exactly the same as we treat the UK horses. And that's, you know, absolutely right.
Now, Matt Collow has tweeted us, and he wants to know why Irish horses are often given a higher GB mark, sometimes much higher than their Irish one. This is an old chestnut. Who would care to explain?
Well, I'll do the chase bit first. I'll hand over to Andrew, because Andrew's is probably, there is probably a much bigger gap hurdling, and he can talk you through that. I suppose it's to carry on to the previous question. We just take a view of a race, like any handicapper would. Sometimes you take a positive view, sometimes you take a less positive view. And if ours comes out slightly above the Irish champ, Docking Chases only here at the minute, then we're going to use that in the GB. I think you'll find if you look through most of the chase ratings, there isn't a great deal to choose. It's always been that way. The medians are very similar over chases in Ireland and England. So we've got a very similar sort of mark of what we call a median racehorse or median chaser. And so you might see differences of between nothing. There's plenty of horses that are on the same mark, and up to, say, shall we say, 4 or 5 pounds for some of the novices, unexposed novices. I think Andrew will probably expand more on the hurdlers to why there's a bigger gaps.
Yeah, I mean, on the hurdling wise, if we just touch on the medians for the minute. Now, the median, for those who don't know, that's the average horse. So if we line up every hurdler in the country that we have rated, the one in the middle will be 105, 106. In Ireland, the equivalent figure is 101. So what that raises two possibilities. Either the average British hurdler is £5 superior to the average Irish hurdler, and I find that very unlikely, or the levels of the two sets of ratings are slightly different. So therefore, when these Irish horses run over here, we essentially have to have them a bit higher to bring them onto our level. So they're going to be a bit higher anyway, just because of that. And then obviously, if we take a slightly higher view of a race for whatever reason, then they might be a bit higher again.
Okay, let's move on to some individual horses. And we've got lots of people asking about the Boss's Oscar, as you both rather anticipated. And Andrew, these are for you. So I'll read you out three of them. So Lloyd Murphy, who you've already heard from, he says, you gave the Boss's Oscar a mark of 151, a raise of £8 from his Irish mark of 143. What was the reasoning behind this? A line through his second behind Flooring Porter. Oliver Holt adds, can you talk through the reasoning for giving the Boss's Oscar £8? That looks pretty out of whack with the rest of the races for Irish horses. I'm sure it's got nothing to do with his stable winning three renewals in a row. And Kai says, what was they thinking giving the Boss's Oscar 151?
Well, first of all, I'll start with, it's definitely nothing to do with the fact that the stable have won the race for the last 3 years. That is,
are you sure about that?
As you would expect, that is completely irrelevant. As in any handicap, the identity of the winner, it makes no difference to us. We just want a good finish. It's an interesting horse, this. I've had quite a few emails about this horse recently, because he was entered for the race at Musselburgh about a month ago, and we published the mark then of 151. So there's been a lot of comments since, so it's £8 higher than Ireland or whatever. I think the main issue seems to be that we have taken a much higher view of his latest run at Leopardstown when he was second to Dandy Mag in the Potence qualifier. Always a very strong race, that. It's always a big field. I think there were 20 runners this year. Obviously, only the first six qualify. And you've got to bear in mind, in Ireland, I think there's only two or three Potence qualifiers over the whole season. So they're usually very competitive races. So obviously, if they don't qualify in them, they've got to come over to Britain to try and qualify. So always good races. We've taken a pretty high view of that race. The first three finished clear. The fourth horse have just been touched off at Cheltenham on her previous run over here. So we've got a good line to the form of it through that. The third horse subsequently came out and went very close in the big 3 mile handicap at the Dublin Racing Festival. So all that form's worked out pretty well. And it's actually not just, if people care to look at that race and look at the horses, look at the marks we've given to the horses in that race, they're all pretty much higher than the Irish equivalents. We've just taken a higher view of that race.
Okay, let's move on to Kashari in the Coral Cup. Oak Racing asks, Kashari has gone up £2. Do you think he wins off this mark? And James Robinson says, ask Ruby how far Kashari wins the Coral Cup. Some confidence behind Kashari, Andrew.
I'd like to think he's got as good a chance as anything else, obviously, as the handicapper, obviously. Yeah, I mean, he won, I think it was Cork, coming back off a very long absence. He was pretty well fancied that day, as I recall. And then he was 6 foot Leopardstown, and he shaped pretty well that day. He made a bad mistake and sort of stayed on. So he's probably got, you know, I'd imagine if he does turn up, he's got the sort of right sort of profile. I'd imagine he'd be fairly popular.
What do the two of you think about the whole debate of top flight mares and the £7 allowance? Is that a gift to a good mare? I take the point about the average mare, Andrew, but these very good horses, are they different? And can there be a structure that reflects that sensibly?
I suppose, I mean, this is just a personal view. It's not a BHA view or anything like that. But I mean, I suppose in the very top races, the grade one races, if those mares have felt good enough to run in those races, then it's arguable they don't need to receive the allowance, especially in these days where we have the enhanced mares programme, so they can run in, you know, a good mare can run against their own sex in a grade one race if they want to. But obviously the likes of Honeysuckle and Epitant, as I said earlier, they probably are good enough to compete on level weight terms. They probably don't necessarily need that allowance. However, to be fair, the number of mares that win top grade one races is still very low, isn't it? So,
do you have a view, Martin?
Yeah, I think it's, again, when you, it's like the old Dawn Run syndrome, isn't it? When you get a very good mare, and we've got two in this year's Champion Hurdle, without doubt, and William Mullins has had a handful of decent, you know, very, very good mares over the years. When they're winning, I suppose it makes focus to people's minds that the mare's allowance is wrong. But I suppose you don't think about the losers as much. At the BHA now, we have a really good data system now. We can look at all sorts of, stats and data about certain things. And things like this are always kept under review. And that's not to say down the line that the mayor's allowance will be changed slightly or you know, looked at again. But I think as Andrew said, you tend to focus on the ones that you know and the ones that are winning, and probably don't focus as much on those that don't.
My thanks to Andrew Milo and Martin Greenwood. I'm now going to throw some of your questions at Ruby. And Ruby, Andrew talked about Kashari. What's your view on Kashari, please, for the Coral Club?
Yeah, he won a pretty ordinary handicap hurdle in Cork on his first run after a long time. Then went to the Dublin Racing Festival and ran over 3 miles. Now, he got caught a long way back in that race and stayed on when it was all over to run into fifth or sixth place, I think it was, in the end. He's rated 146. He's 9 years of age. He'd have his chance in the Coral Cup if he has the pace to hold a good enough position.
Doesn't sound like you're as confident as James Robinson, who's basically asking how far is the horse going to win by.
Well, James, I hope he doesn't run the Leinster National and ruin your dream.
Yeah, he does hold an entry. Kevin Harrington is really interested in Ganapathy. He wants to know what your thoughts on the mark of 140 are. He's shaped like the best horse behind the then-rated 141 Dereal Deal and ran a blinder at the Dublin Racing Festival over 2.6 miles. Winning the Martin Pipe, potentially a perfect way to close out a huge week for Paul and the Donnellys?
Yeah, I doubt Paul Townend will be able to ride him in the Martin Pipe, but the Real Deal race, he definitely, I think, threw that away at the last. If you watch him going to the last in that punchline race, he arrives to win for Brian Hayes, but with the experience he had, he just jammed on and took all day to jump the last and allowed the Real Deal to come and chin him. In a good run then behind Gallard and Mesneil over 2.6 at the Dublin Racing Festival, I'd say 140 is definitely a fair enough mark for him, and he would look like one of the more novices that could be competitive in a handicap coming out of Willie's. But having said that, he is a novice, and Willie Mullins could well run him in a novice.
Kevin's probably remembering what you said about being part of a team when you mentioned Paul. That's what Kevin will be thinking. How about you? What I asked you to have a look at some handicappers and to have a look at some of those, and you said that you were really raring to go with that.
The ink ran out of my pen, so I had to get a pencil. So what did I like? I thought Run Wild Fred off a mark of 140 up only £4 from the mark he was second on in the Tiestes would be very interested in the Kim Muir. Now he's also in the Leinster National as well, so, but I think he has a mark that he's capable of performing well off. And I thought Willie had a horse called Gallop in the Champ. He was 6th to Appreciate It at the Dublin Racing Festival. He's in the Martin Pipe. He was second to Sea Ducker in Goran Park on his first run for Willie. He ran pretty disappointing in Limerick at Christmas, where he pulled up behind San Roy. He's off 142. I thought he could be interesting in the Martin Pipe as well, or the Coral Cup.
Okay, I'll bear those in mind. I will be taking a closer look at the handicappers in next week's Road to Cheltenham column. And if you would like to hear my full conversation with Martin and Andrew, make sure you go to either the Racing TV website this weekend or our YouTube channel, and you can see the whole show in full this weekend. Now time for a really interesting question, and thank you to EFL Numbers for sending this in. EFL Numbers
basically sent the question to my PA.
You are beginning to like that a little bit too much. Can I make that point? It's a little bit too much. What impact will the change of day and course have on the Grand Annual? Always seems to be a fast pace in the Friday slot. Will the typical slower ground earlier in the week negate this, or will the speedier old course mean a faster pace than normal?
I would think faster early. I think getting a position is probably more key on the old course than the new. You can come from a long way back, especially with the long downhill run from four out to the home turn on the new course, allows horses to find a way through the traffic and come from the back of the field. On the old course, that'd be much harder. I mean, Le Presien, Rock the World, Savello, Belvano, Pigeon Island, they all came from a long way back to win the Grand Annual. I think it'll suit horses that are able to sit much closer to the pace now.
Pigeon Island. That's nostalgia for you. There's
another trend that could be gone. I would think a couple of jockeys that had won the Gold Cup went and won the Grand Annual. Pigeon Island being one, Rock the World being another. I do think guys that have gotten confidence out of the Gold Cup can go and win the Grand Annual. So that one's gone as well.
So you think Paddy Brennan was on the top of the world, Mar?
I remember being at the start with him, and he was on top of the world, and he doodled along with Pigeon Island without a care in the world.
I'm very grateful to Paul Jones, from pauljoneshorseracing.com. Many of you will be familiar with his work. I asked him earlier in the season whether the Grand Annual had been run on the old course previously, and he said that yes, it had. And after doing a bit of research, it moved from the old course to the new course in 1993. And in the early days, when you were allowed to run horses twice in the festival, Sandra Valley, who was pulled up in the Arkle, went on to win the Grand Annual 3 days later. So it has been there before. It's a relatively modern thing, it being on the new course. Finally, it's Gold Cup time. We're going to imagine the Well-Child Cheltenham Gold Cup. And there's quite an easy way of doing this, Ruby, in many ways, because we've got the winner of the last two renewal in Album Photo. And those two races, as we've been saying all the way through the series, were run in very different ways.
Yeah, look, we could have picked out Gold Cups going back to God knows what year, Lydia, to try and do this. But as you said, with Album Photo the favourite and having won the last two, why not use his two Gold Cups? And as you said, and as we've all said, and I'm sure as everybody looking in realises, they were two completely different races. So if you look at the start of the 2019 Gold Cup, you might bite Invitation Only, Clan de Zobo, definitely Red, Elegant Escape, Yala Inky and Bell's Hill all line up to go forward. Whereas in 2020, that's Kenboy, Santini, Elegant Escape is there again, Bristol Demai, who ends up at the back of the 2019, to the forefront of 2020, and Monoly Lost in Translation. Now, the jump and run to the first fence, it's interesting watching it how Native River struggles early in the 2019 Gold Cup. He gets tight on the way to the first and ends up quite far back. But if we're looking for Album Photo, when they jump the first, if you notice, only Monoly and possibly Lost in Translation in the 2020 Gold Cup are on the bridle. In the 2019 Gold Cup, nobody is keen. The pace is already on. And I think if you look for Album Photo at the back of the second fence, as they head to the bend away from the stands, if you just freeze the two of them, Album Photo is just behind Annabelle Fly in his first year with only Shattered Love behind him. Whereas in 2020, in his second Gold Cup, he's in sixth place. There's only five or six in front of him. There are five or six behind him. So the pace after jumping two fences is much different. And Paul Townend was much closer in 2020. We roll it on then to the first ditch, which is second ditch, which is the first fence. And you can see that the spread on the field. Mike Bite has gone forward. Invitation Only, Native River, definitely Red, Elegant Escape, they're all the front runners. Album Photo has moved forward, but already Bell's Hill and Yala Inky have lost their position. Whereas if you look at the 2020 Gold Cup, only Al Kemboi, who was restrained back by Patrick Mullins, has disimproved his position by the seventh fence. Bristol Lamai, Elegant Escape, Monali, Santini lost in translation, and Albon Ford was right behind him. So in the first mile almost, only one horse went backwards in 2020, whereas in 2019, two had lost their position. So as they get to the last fence with a circuit to race, Might Bite and Nata River are upsides in front. Clanda's Oboe is just behind them, and Albon Ford and Annabelle Fly have moved into a nice position, sort of fifth and sixth. But look at the stretch from first to last place compared to the 2020 Gold Cup, where they're three abreast. Elegant Escape, Monali, Bristol Demai. In the second row is Lost in Translation, Santini, Albon Ford. But the rest of the field are much closer to the back of them. It was a much more concertina, steadily run race. Now we race on to the last ditch. And if you look at the approach to the last ditch, which is the 17th fence, Native River and White Pite are well clear of Clanda's Oboe, who in turn is in front of Albon Ford, Elegant Escape and Bristol Demai. But Annabelle Fly has lost his position from the bend away from the stands to the ditch. Whereas if you look at the 2021, they're all much closer. Monali, Bristol Demai, Elegant Escape, Santini, Lost in Translation, Albon Ford, Clanda's Oboe. They're in a heap jumping the last ditch. And as we turn it further on, right down to the home turn, Albon Ford is edging out to get a bit of a run, but he's going to get away from them all horses who are off the bridle. Look at the 2020 Gold Cup. Off the bend, two out. With the exception of one horse, anything had still had a chance of winning the 2020 Gold Cup. Santini, Albon Ford, Lost in Translation. Real Steel has come from last, swooping around the outside. Monali, Delta War, Chris's Dream is even involved. Presenting Percy's right in their heels, and Kemboi is starting to stay on. It's just that the difference in the two races was extraordinary. Really good jump at the second last by Albon Ford puts him in front, presented Percy tips up, and then it's a dash. Santini has to swap around. 2019, Albon Ford has just gone clear. 2020, he's having to rally all the way to the line with Santini closing him down. Now the question is, we've looked at two races, 2019 and 2020. What did we foresee in 2021? I think a 2019 race.
Let's unpick some of that slightly. So you mentioned when you were talking about Native River in the 2019 Gold Cup, he didn't quite have the pace of the 2018 Gold Cup when he and Mike Bite went at it against each other pretty much from the outset and throughout the race. He showed plenty of pace with his younger legs in 2018. In 2019, he wasn't quite so quick, was he? He's slow to the first fence. He's pushed along after the second. You know, Richard Johnson is trying to get him forward on the first circuit, but in the end has to settle for tracking the leader. So is he back to his 2018 ability in terms of, you know, being able to hold his position in the race? Or are we looking at an older horse who isn't quite the same?
I think Richard Johnson can counteract that. And I think if you look at the start of the 2019 Gold Cup, he's just inside me on Bell's Hill. It's quite tight at the start. And he's slow to break, to go from a walk into a gallop. That's where he was sluggish. And then the door gets closed on him. Mm-hmm. Whereas if he jumped and got a better break with a bit more room towards the outside of the field, that won't be a problem. He just got caught. He broke. It happens all. You see it all the time in the flat because you're watching horses coming through stalls, and you rarely notice it over jumps. He didn't break. He just missed the break and ended up in the wrong place. I don't think it was younger legs, older legs, or managing to get a gallop. He just missed the break and then was stuck in the wrong place. I think with a bit of room to the outside, he can break.
Okay, let's talk about Froden, who's one of his other competitors for the front. He was the first horse to the first in the 2019 Ryanair. He was pretty quickly in charge of that race. In 2020, he got a flyer at the first, but then, and it was still in front, I think, until the fifth when Min took over. And actually, if you look at the second fence, there's Alplutar as well in the second fence of that Ryanair, and he's a little bit slow into it. And we'll come back to Alplutar later on in the show. But Frodon particularly, we've seen him from the start to the first fence of the King George early in this season, able to get round and then control the race from the front. Do you think he's going to be able to do something like that? All of that evidence that we have got from him in the early stages in the race, what's he going to be able to achieve in a Gold Cup?
He has, without doubt, the pace to lead over the first two in the Gold Cup and comfortably lead. Could you see Native River, Kemboi, Vindication dictating the pace in a Ryanair? I most certainly couldn't. So I think he has, without doubt, will have the speed to get out and lead them up over the first two fences in the Gold Cup. And then whatever pace he goes will be whatever decision Bryony makes and how much pressure the others put on. But I think we saw it in that Ryanair, how easily he gets to the front and in the King George. And watch how Bryony let him run over the first couple of fences in the King George before she slowed him down. Now, will she get to slow down the Gold Cup from the top of the hill on the first circuit? Maybe not. But she mightn't. That still won't take from the pace of the race. Because if Native River or Vindication or Kenboy wish to go faster, they'll be going a really strong gallop to take it off Rhoda.
We have this vision of Native River and Frodon jumping upsides each other. Of course, we've already seen it once this season. Now, there are mitigating circumstances for Frodon. Maybe he doesn't particularly like Aintree that much. But in the back straight, there's a run of four fences. The initial, I think, four fences of this race, this is the Many Clouds, were omitted due to the low sun. But Native River and Frodon go up against each other over this run of four fences. And Frodon seems to be jumping well at first, but then Native River outjumps him, and that's it.
That was it. But I get the feeling it was his first run. I think it was Frodon's first run of the season. It was the Many Clouds. Maybe it was his second. But yeah, but I just think having gone 5-6 furlongs without jumping a fence, horses, that's a different way of racing. And it allowed Native River to wait to warm up and wind up, whereas Frodon could have been doing with slowing it down at that stage a fraction. Look, it's a pretty valid point. I can see Frodon making it early and then Bryony slowing him and something else taking it off him, be it Native River, Kenboy, or even Vindication. I could see being positively ridden if he was to run. But I can see Frodon making it for the first four or five fences before Native River cranks it up. But that's what will make it a 2019 race, is something forcing the pace after a mile.
Let's briefly talk Vindication and Kenboy. They both have a habit of going out to their right. Now, Kenboy was patiently ridden, going in first in the 2019 Gold Cup, and he fell. Then in 2020...
He didn't fall. He clipped heels about three strides after the fence and unseats David, right? David Mullins. And then in 2020...
He goes right, doesn't he?
He does go right, but... I don't think Willie wanted Patrick Mullins to make the running, so Patrick took Kenboy back. But when he got behind the leaders and in tight down the inside without the space to go right, which he likes to have, he jumped shocking. I think even if he does go forward, he will have to have a bit of room to go to his right.
Yes, I just wonder whether that is going to, even if he is ridden more forcefully, like Willie Mullins has been talking about, whether he's just got the groove to be able to hold that position at Cheltenham, even if he is on the outside. Go on.
Might do, but it's a chance Frodon will be going left. You'll have Vindication and Kenboy going right. Native River straights a Gunboy down the middle. So, it'll be good viewing from behind.
Now, can we talk about Album Photo's jumping? Now, it seems a bit incongruous to talk about whether there are flaws in a dual Gold Cup winner's jumping, but he fell two out in the RSA chase, two out, my favourite fence on the off course. And then in the 2019 Gold Cup, he makes a few mistakes on the way round. He makes mistakes at the 13th in both 2019 and 2020, the same fence. A big mistake two out in 2019. Equally, there are some examples of him jumping really well. You've mentioned one already, but the last fence in the 19 Gold Cup, six out, he outjumps Santini. What do you make of Album Photo's jumping?
I think he's his own way of jumping. And when he fell in the RSA, it wasn't the first time he fell. He had fallen at Limerick at Christmas with the race at his mercy. But I think he has found a way of finding a leg. And yeah, the second last in the Gold Cup, I'm sure Paul Townend's heart in 2019 skipped a beat because he just threw himself at it. But he has found a way of keeping himself upright. And I think he has learned to keep his hind end lower than he did as a novice. His hind end used to get too high and would pitch him over on his head. And he's figured out himself to keep his hind end down. And that suits him. But yeah, he's jumping. He is not best mate to jump. He's trying to emulate best mate. But he doesn't remind me of best mate jumping.
No, that horse was cat-like over his obstacles. It's interesting you say that he's learned, because there's one of two explanations to me, because I think he jumps better in the slowly run 2020 Gold Cup than he did in the fast run 2019 Gold Cup. And so I didn't know whether that was a function of pace or a function of improvement in the horse himself and his technique.
It could easily be, but in 2019, he looked in a different league to the opposition, whereas in 2020, he just hangs on. So I would think a really strongly Gold Cup, that to me, brought out a better performance in Album Photo.
Okay. Santini. Let's talk about Santini, shall we? He gets sort of crowded out early on in last year's Gold Cup. And there's a few times where on the first circuit, he's having to be ridden into the race and Nico de Boinville's having to strenuously hold his position. But he actually then gets rolling on the second circuit a lot more. I mean, he's able to squeeze out Monoly. It's just, again, then in this slowly run race, he gets sort of, he loses his pitch approaching two out, has to switch again approaching the last. So a strong, more strongly run race surely is going to suit him as well. And there wasn't much between him and Santini and Album Photo last year.
No, but it you're right, it changes. The fifth last, he's a good jump and he gets up past Monoly and squeezes Monoly out on the run to the fourth last round the bend. Rachel Blackmore has to go back and that puts Nico de Boinville heading to the fourth last in pole position down the inside. But when the race quickens away from three out off the home turn, Santini loses out with the injection of speed and allows Album Photo to get across in front of him. Lost in Translation also gets across in front of him. And Santini has to switch around to deliver that renewed challenge he had from the back of the last. He just lacked speed at the right tactical time. This year, I can't see him being anywhere near the front of this race. He will be the one coming from off the pace. I would think he would be outpaced in the race that we're going to see in 2 weeks' time. And he could be, when you look at the race, thinking, oh, the ones in front are tired. Is there anything coming from behind? That could be Santini if they go too hard.
We floated the idea of some headgear for him, given that tactical play that you think he's going to face. Would that happen?
I think he could put the blinkers and the cheek pieces on.
I'm going to tactfully switch horse now to his stable companion, Champ. Where are you just imagine for us how you think the early part of the race is going to set up. In the early part of the RSA, of course, Champ was out the back.
He was, and was ridden behind and used two different horses to get settled. Battle Over Dion initially. He sits on his girth and then he uses Pim. Where do I see him in this Gold Cup? Well, I see Fraud on Native River Vindication, front rank at Plutar Manila Indo. Second rank Santini trying to hold that position, but probably been a bit further back. Lost in Translation, Champ, Album Photo, I would see in the next row, all in the same place. Will Nico ride him? He jumped to his left the last day. It'll be interesting to see if Nico goes down the inside on him. And I think if for a horse you might be slightly worried about being a bit keen, that's where I'd go. I'd go down the inside, have horses on only one side of me, and he's going to go a bit left. I'd sit him in there, 6, 7, down the inside.
Okay, interesting. And how about a Plutar? I mentioned him previously running in the Ryanair last year where he was slow in and out of the second. You've talked about him being slow at shorter distances, getting away from his fences.
Yeah, but I think the falls of Manila Indo and Delta Work away from the stands in Leopardstown allowed Mellon, Kenboy and whatever the third horse was to get clear of the field. And he got caught then at the first fence past the stand. A gap appears that he's caught off the back of the front three. I could see him being ridden pretty similarly to how he was ridden in last year's Ryanair. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was ridden out a little bit to get him galloping when he lands over his fences.
Okay. And the last one is to position in this race is Royal Pagai. If we have a look back at the Peter Marsh, he starts off in stone last, but he's just so far superior to the rest of the field that, you know, without really doing much, he finds himself in front of the 11th.
I think it's easy enough to position him in this race because he'll have won on Tuesday. I'm only messing. I think he will take his time like he did in the Peter Marsh and follow Album Photo.
Okay.
Be an easy way to ride him. I think like the one to beat will be in yellow and black colours, put a target on his back.
Yeah, okay. Where do you want to take it up from then, if you're reimagining for me the closing stages of the 2021 Gold Cup? Where do you want to go from four out?
It's it depends on what form one of the front four is in. One of them, like, how far can one of those front four bring you? Like, Alvin Photo is no doubt about his stamina. There's a question mark about Aplu, Tires and Champ. Neither have won over 3.25 miles. So that will be in Paul Townend's mind. So it's, when does he want to, is he confident enough that he's always going to be quicker than Aplu, Tar and Champ? If he is, he will stay sitting all the way down the hill. If he thinks they're going as well as him and he has to play the stamina card, that will determine how early Paul Townend goes. And that's only a decision he will be able to make fourth last. Does he need to drag Champ and Aplu, Tar? Or is he just always going better than him? And then if Ryan Pagai runs, where is he in your rearview mirror? I think, to me, you can never go out with a set plan in your head of where you're going to attack. You have to ride that as it happens in front of you. And that will mean looking at the horses around you.
And you're backing Alboom Photo in whatever scenario emerges?
I think I am, yeah. I think I wasn't sure leaving Cheltenham last March that he would win the third Gold Cup. As I've watched replays of it and watched the other horses throughout the season, I think there are genuine challengers. I thought initially it would be Manila Indo. He slightly disappointed me. I think you definitely have to make a case for Aplu, Tar. No doubt Champ has a chance. But I just think, from what I've been watching through the year, I think he did really well to win last year. I shouldn't have been disappointed. I thought he got a great ride, but I think he did well to win. And a stronger run race will suit him better.
So those are our thoughts on the 2021 Well-Child Cheltenham Gold Cup. It is the feature race of the festival, and I am really looking forward to it. So you've heard what Ruby and I think about the 2021 Well-Child Cheltenham Gold Cup. Let's find out what Martin Greenwood thinks, the BHA Steeplechase team leader. He's the handicapper that you heard from earlier on in the show. Staying chases are his passion. He has his eye on a couple of horses, one of which might run in the Gold Cup this season and one might be there next year.
I think Monkfish and Gale are both extremely talented horses. I have no doubt that these two horses have got the world at their feet. I really do. When Monkfish won this penultimate start, I wasn't that impressed, actually. I thought he just did the job well. And I said to somebody, and I'll openly admit it, I'd be running in the 3.6 mile with that horse. And then he turned up the next time. I was pointless lying to myself. I just thought he just did it in workmanlike fashion. The next time, I mean, my God, I mean, I could have ridden him. It was that good. So I assume he's going for the 3 miler, and I assume Royal Pagale's going for the 3.6 mile, not the Gold Cup, which will probably come onto the Gold Cup in a minute. So presuming, and I'm going to Royal Pagale now, I mean, again, he's almost like the English, or the UK Monkfish, isn't he? I mean, seldom do you see my handicaps, especially, ripped to shreds like this horse has. I mean, he's not just, I mean, Kempton was even better than Haydock, in my opinion, the actual style, visually at least. I mean, incredible, a horse tanked so well, so, you know, for so long, and then still on the bridle at the last. And Haydock, basically, the race fell apart a little bit, admittedly, you know, some of the horses fell. But again, never came off the steel, basically. I mean, amazing. I understand why they don't want to run these horses in the Gold Cup this year. You know, I understand all that. I understand the sort of politics of the racing planning, if you like. But I don't think either of those two horses would actually be out of contention this year's Gold Cup. I understand why you probably want to wait. Two incredible horses, and I'd be amazed if they don't both win, as long as everything goes, you know, goes well.
So thank you very much to Martin. So for him, it will be Royal Pagai if the horse runs this year, but he likes Aplu, Tar in that horse's absence. Aplu, Tar for Martin, Ruby.
Yeah, and you can easily see why. I mean, he's Ryanair form behind Main and St. Calvados is really good form. Looked like he wanted every yard of the trip in Leopardstown, but if I was going out in Alboom Photo, at least I know I was guaranteed to stay. It's a question mark for Aplu, Tar.
It absolutely is. Right, that's the end of Road to Cheltenham this week. Don't forget to have a look on the website, racing twitch.tv.com/RoadToCheltenham. You can catch up on all past shows and past columns as well. And make sure you tune in next week when we have a Road to Cheltenham special. Good night.
Paddy Power, sponsors of the Road to Cheltenham.